Owen.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance. Click or call. Aviva is on the ball with all calls answered in under a minute.
This is News Talk.
We're going to preview all of the big sporting action this weekend. I'm joined by Owen Sheehan from Off the Ball. Hello, Owen.
Hey, Claire.
Starting with the Masters, of course. It's so fascinating because it's really intensely personal, and we all become like pseudo psychologists, don't we? Like, I was reading about Rory this morning having this target on his back, and he'll know that he has the target on his back, and he's walking around thinking they're all out to get me. And then he's saying, well, I played aggressively last time, it worked for me, so I'm going to do that. You know, it's just down to the minutiae of this, isn't it?
Well, there's certainly a target on his back after yesterday. We're running with that sort of approach to Rory's psychology and the psychology of the field. Shane Lowry was laughing after his round yesterday evening that Rory's probably going to go on and win four in a row here now at Augusta after putting everybody through the ringer for his entire career up until and including last year. So it was a sensational round yesterday from Rory McIlroy. He actually hadn't shot a sub 70 round on a Thursday since 2018, and he rocks up yesterday and shoots a 67. He's in a tie for the lead on 5 under par. And really it was the 13th, 14th and 15th holes where he did the damage. They kind of sum up his whole round yesterday. Far from perfect off the tee on 13 and on 15. He goes wayward off the tee box, finds himself in the trees, and then a couple of brilliant recovery shots on both of those holes gets him into position to attack the flag and come away with birdies in both of those. So going 3 under in those three holes, coming off the back of Amen Corner was huge for him, really. He birdied all 4 par fives. That's always a good sign as to where Rory McIlroy is at compared to last year. He was 13 under on a 16 par fives last year. And at this time last season, he was in a tie for 27th, and he would go on to shoot a 66 on the Friday, which was when he really made his move. So if he happens to put in a round quite like last year's Friday, this Friday, then he's going to be a really, really strong contender going into the weekend. He's out at 6:44 p.m. this evening. Shane Lowry,
it's also a great time for us, isn't it?
Brilliant time for us. Absolutely perfect. We're going to be on the radio from 7 p.m. tonight. So it's just a beautiful time if you're presenting off the ball of an evening, 6:44 p.m. Lowry will have a few holes played by that stage. He's out at 5:56 p.m. And also another brilliant start from an Irish golfer yesterday from Shane Lowry.
You know, we were talking to Padraig Harrington here on the programme earlier in the week, and his hopes for Shane are so high going into this. Yeah, he really thought that he's so hungry for the win. You know, he had those couple of blips. He just felt he was ready for it. Yeah.
It's interesting because if we analyse the psychology of Rory McIlroy and drill into that quite a bit, it almost feels the Lowry psychology is just as interesting given he has never won a green jacket. And it kind of feels that he's able to take the punches that Augusta National throws at you more so at this stage. And they threw a few haymakers at him yesterday, to be fair. He had that 4-putt on the fourth hole for a double bogey, which came after a really good start to his round. He had back-to-back birdies to open up. And then he holds out in the 13th with a 68-yard lob wedge, I think it was. Bit of luck on the 13th, but probably deserved it. And he came off pretty cheerful despite bogeying the 17th hole, maybe putting a little bit of a bum note to his final few holes yesterday, but still in really, really good shape on 2 under par. And it's fantastic to have both of them up near the top of the leaderboard. So Lowry's in a tie for 6 alongside Xander Schauffele, Scottie Scheffler, Justin Rose. So quite a quartet of golfers there. And then in between them, you've got 3 golfers on 3 under par. You've got Kitayama, Jason Day and Patrick Reed on 3 under. But Sam Burns, Rory McIlroy, 5 under par. They're the men to watch at this stage.
What about sexism in golf? We heard a bit about that, didn't we?
We did. Well, I mean, is this the Gary Player comments?
The 90-year-old man making the comment about the Sky presenter.
I think even 90-year-old men all around the world would be not overly pleased to be in the same company as Gary Player. He hasn't always been a bastion of great morals. And I think sometimes the less we say about Gary Player, the better.
It cut back to him, and the presenter had done her bit, and he said, she's a good-looking chick. And then We moved on, or Sky moved on, and of course everything erupts online then. But it does play into that reputation that golf sometimes has, doesn't it?
Yeah, but the thing is, for golf fans who've watched golf coverage over the years, and I've seen a little bit of reaction to this on social media, a lot of it is, geez, Gary Player is a bit of an idiot for not realising he's talking to one of the most well-informed golf presenters out there. Not that that is a way of like standing over the comments or defending him, defending her against the comments, because he shouldn't be saying it full stop.
Uh-huh.
But it also just shows maybe a great underappreciation from player standpoint that possibly he's talking to somebody who's actually got an analysis and an eye for the game that might even be greater than his at this stage.
Yeah, but you're not going to change him. Like, not,
you that know, is for
you're
sure.
Just not going to change him. So best maybe ignore and move on. I was reading Matt Williams today in the Irish Times. He was saying that the Rugby Champions Cup is the quarterfinals is the best weekend of club rugby in the world, in his opinion.
It's true, I guess. It's hard to disagree with that. Like, I think we look at this from a very Northern Hemisphere perspective. Obviously, Matt Williams wouldn't necessarily. He'd have seen a lot more Super Rugby than most of us would. Mm-hmm. So we might take his word for that. It's certainly the best thing that we've got going on in terms of club rugby. And this weekend is going to be no different. We obviously have the Irish interest in Leinster going up against Sale tomorrow evening at 5:30. But there is a couple of domestic affairs happening within this which are going to be brilliant. You've got Bath versus Northampton tonight at 8 p.m. They're the top two teams in the English Premiership. And then you've got Bordeaux versus Toulouse on Sunday at 3 o'clock. I would argue are the two best teams in French rugby. They're not 1 and 2 at the moment in top 14, but they are the best teams in French rugby. And then you've got Glasgow hosting Toulon tomorrow at 3 p.m, which is really interesting in the sense that Glasgow are perhaps a contender in this competition. So all four games, absolutely worth watching if you're an Irish rugby fan. So hard to disagree with Matt on that one.
Yeah, I can just tell what's going to be happening in my house tonight. We'll be flicking between off the ball, of course, uh-huh, and the golf and the rugby, because they're all sort of on around the same time, aren't they?
It's a bumper weekend of sport, because you've got like the GAA Championship coming back into proceedings. You've got the Premier League coming back. You've got the League of Ireland happening this weekend. It's one of those where a spreadsheet might need to be produced for trying to plan your sports watching. And if people aren't actually driving too far this weekend due to the protests, it might actually have lined up pretty perfectly to just spend your time at home.
Okay, so the women's Six Nations happening as well this weekend, to add to that list.
Yeah, so England versus Ireland tomorrow at 2:25. This is happening at Twickenham. There are 75,000 tickets sold for this game, which is extraordinary. It's going to be a women's Six Nations record. England are coming back to Twickenham. This is where they won the World Cup last year. Their players have been talking about a bit of a come down after winning a tournament like that, but they should still have loads in the tank to beat Ireland. Ireland, they've struggled against England every time they've played them recently, particularly away from home. Last time they were at Twickenham was 2 years ago, and they lost by 78 points in this fixture. It should be a lot closer this time. England are missing a few players as well. I think between retirements, pregnancies, injuries, they're missing up to 9 of their World Cup winning team from last year. Really interesting wrinkle in this. You've got Cliona Maloney-MacDonald, who's earning a 50th cap for Ireland. She's going to be going up against her wife, Claudia Maloney-MacDonald, who's on the England team. So that's an interesting wrinkle, which look, has happened in other sports, and I presume happened in rugby as well plenty of times in the
that's
past.
That's great, but, though, talking point.
Fantastic, yeah, fantastic. One in the forwards, one in the backs. We'll see how much they actually come into contact with one another over the course of the game. And also brilliant to see Erin King back playing for Ireland again. She's captaining Ireland for the very first time. And that Ireland back row, herself, Brittany Hogan, Aoife Wafer, that is pretty obviously Ireland's strong point in that team. They're all outstanding players. You could argue two, maybe three of them world-class. Aoife Wafer's now playing in England at the moment. She's flying over there. So if Ireland are going to have a chance tomorrow, that's the section of the pitch where they'll need to dominate.
There's a lot of noise, though, isn't there, around women's rugby in Ireland? You know, that it's just on this upward trajectory now.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, the Ireland rugby team is. And I think this is possibly a rugby conversation that permeates from women's to men's rugby as well, and maybe across countries, is that test level rugby is something that we all love and has massive support. And this Ireland team gets huge amount of commercial support, huge amount of eyeballs on their games whenever they're on television at this point relative to recent years. But the club game here is still struggling massively. And even the England players, as I've mentioned, they were talking about this come down from the World Cup last year. They were saying that it's really difficult to go from an 80,000 capacity crowd at Twickenham in the World Cup final last year to their own club games, where there's only a few thousand people showing up to them. So this is not an Irish-specific problem. This is, I would argue, not even just a women's-specific problem. It's a rugby-specific problem where the national team do tend to dominate everything.
If that is the case, you're not going to get the players coming through as well, which is a big problem.
It is a problem, and there's a real lack of high-level competition for players who want to stay in Ireland. That's why Aoife Wafer has gone. She's gone to play at a higher level at club. We don't even have the provincial system here that matches the men's setup. But hopefully that's the next step in all of this, because this national team, everybody who watches them can tell they're going in the right direction. It may not look like it against England this weekend, because England are probably going to win. But there is a hope that Ireland could win the rest of their games in this year's Six Nations, which would be a massive step forward.
Now, can Liverpool recover from that drubbing that they got during the week to beat Fulham tomorrow at home? Probably, you would imagine.
Probably, but at the same time, there's going to be a little bit of pressure on them, because Brentford are playing Everton at 3 p.m. tomorrow afternoon, which is kind of crazy to say might have something, some sort of impact on the Champions League race. So Brentford are in 7th on 46 points, Everton are in 8th on 46 points. If there is a winner in that game, one of those teams will be level on points with Liverpool. Chelsea are only a point behind Liverpool. Liverpool are in 5th position at the moment. They need to fight tooth and nail to ensure they qualify for the Champions League next season. And I'm just not 100% sure they will. Like, how does Arne Slot play this on Saturday evening at 5:30? I know he obviously rested Mo Salah. He didn't play a single minute against Paris Saint-Germain a couple of nights ago. But does he now start against Fulham? Does Alexander Isak play an extra few minutes on Saturday evening? Or is he actually holding something back for the second leg of Paris Saint-Germain? Because while they were lucky to get away with a two-goal beating, it's still only a two-goal turnaround that they're going to need at Anfield. They've done more special things at Anfield in the not-too-distant past.
When's that? That next week?
It's going to be next week, so it's going to be Tuesday night next week. So there's a short enough turnaround. So how does Slot actually approach that? It'd be easier for him to set up his team tomorrow night had they been beaten 5-0, because he would know that tie is dead. But there's something still alive in that PSG tie, I think, even though PSG are so much better than Liverpool at the moment, and PSG should have won that game 4-5-0. The fact that they didn't, I would say, gives Arne Slot pause for thought with regards to how he's going to set up his team tomorrow.
It's a really tough schedule, isn't it?
It is. But and look, they're coming off the back of the international break as well recently, and they were in the FA Cup, obviously took a bit of a drubbing against Manchester City. The thing for Liverpool is that confidence now is probably an issue. As I say, the drubbing against Manchester City, it was, for anybody who watched that game, a drubbing against Paris Saint-Germain as well, even though the scoreline didn't reflect that. Where are those confidence levels at this moment? The reverse game against Fulham was an extraordinary game. Liverpool looked in full control of that game before a late Harrison Reed screamer, people remember, probably goal of the season at this point. So there might be a few ghosts of Craven Cottage coming to Anfield tomorrow evening as well. But they're a fascinating one. Like, I mean, it's so much of the Premier League at this stage is up for grabs. Like, as I've mentioned with regards to the Brentford and Everton situation, you've also got a whole host of other teams who are, I guess, mathematically in the shout. Like, even Fulham. If Fulham were to beat Liverpool tomorrow, for example, they'd only be 2 points behind Liverpool. And Brighton and Sunderland are only a point behind Fulham at this point. So it's all to play for in the Premier League. And of course, you've got the title race and the relegation battle still going on.
All of that going on. Off the ball at 7 o'clock tonight.
Yes, indeed. So Dublin derby tonight. Shamrock Rovers against St. Pat's. St. Pat's versus Shamrock Rovers tonight. Assuming there is no disruption with regards to these games happening tonight.
Owen, thank you so much.
The Clare Byrne Show with Aviva Insurance. Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.